First up this afternoon, we have Jeffrey Tucker, founder of the Brownstone Institute. Jeffrey is a writer, a publisher, an entrepreneur, and of course, a frequent speaker. In 2020, he helped organize the Great Barrington Declaration, which advocated the lifting of the COVID-19 restrictions. He is also senior economics columnist for the Epoch Times and the author of 10 books, including Liberty or Lockdown. And we are thrilled to have Jeffrey with us today. The floor is yours.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
I have to think about that far, together, alone, fast thing. I don't know. Maybe that works. I don't know. Well, it's very nice to be with you today. We obviously have a lot we could talk about. I think the title of my session is something like Life After Lockdowns. I have a book coming out in about 6 weeks by the same title, Life After Lockdowns, and I don't like long books, I don't. But there was no way I could do anything but make this book 450 pages. Sorry about that. That's as a publisher, that's a hard question, but yeah, some other time. So everything changed in 2020, and I'm glad to see now there's growing recognition of this fact. I mean, how can anybody deny it? You know, we thought the world was a more or less functioning place, flawed, a lot of problems, things to be fixed. We didn't know that the mechanisms that allow something to be fixed had themselves been broken. Like, we didn't know, speaking for myself possibly, just how broken the world was going into what happened from March 2020 onward. Just last night, I was so puzzled because I read an article I had written March 16th, 2020, and it said, well, that ended as quickly as it began. I thought, you know, what could I have been thinking? So I reread the piece, and it's absolutely strange. What had happened is that our beloved Lord and Master Anthony Fauci had written an article in which he had corrected the previous claims that the infection fatality rate of SARS-CoV-2 was 3% and 4%, as the World Health Organization told us a month earlier, and said it's going to be, you know, a little more in line with 1957, 58, 68, 69 of bad flu years. Okay, that's what he says. And otherwise pointed out that the main vulnerable populations were the elderly and infirm. And I had read that article and thought, thank God, the guy everybody's listening to is finally making some sense. Now we will, I said this in the article, now we will course correct and put everything back like it was. And then we'll have to scramble to figure out who did this to us, who made such a mess of the world. Again, April 16th, 2020. Who did this? How'd they destroy so many things, demoralize, kept schools out, kids out of school for a full month? Can you imagine? You know, so I'm saying these kinds of things. And basically declaring that the great experiment, lockdowns, was now over. That was April 16th, 2020. I read this with my eyes popping out, like, how could I have been so naive, so foolish as to believe that there would be some relationship between the information we get and the things we do, you know? And I realized the mistake I made is that I thought that the world still worked, that it still functioned like we always thought it did, whereas it turned out that wasn't true because, of course, as we know, April 16th, 2020 was just the beginning. And a lot more had broken than even I had known. I thought there was disease panic in the air, and that was the beginning and the end of it. And madness of crowds, you know, there's history's full of it, of times when people have great fears and do terrible things to the world, and then they snap out of it and go back to the old thing. I didn't realize that there was a lot more going on here, a lot more. And my life has been consumed entirely ever since, trying to figure out what that is. And what's been strange about it is that the more I know, the more I realize I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay? So in a sense, I know less now than I did 4 years ago, even though I know vastly more. I don't know what the right metaphor is, a rabbit hole, which is a hole rabbit jumps in. It just keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper, you know, and it's terrifying. Just to illustrate how bad this is, hardly a day goes by where I don't bump into something that I had not fully, that I previously had sort of internalized as the news of the day, which now I'm realizing there's something wrong. And I'll just give you an example that happened just yesterday. And this is my life getting distracted by this nonsense. Do you remember in the early days when life was normal and then suddenly everybody's screaming that there's an invisible enemy everywhere? And you're gonna, if it gets anywhere near you, you've got a, you know, very strong chance of like dying instantly. And so the world freaked out. But you couldn't find out if you had it or not. And this was because there weren't tests available. This is a weird window, and somebody who knows about this can correct me, but I'm imagining that this window went from, let's say, the first week of March till about mid-April of 2020. That was a period in which people wanted to know if they have the great coronavirus, but couldn't find out because we didn't have tests. What happened was the CDC had forbid the many, many private labs in this country from producing their own tests. Said, no, we've got this covered. You can't do your own testing. We'll take care of it. And then their tests failed. CDC distributed tests and discovered that it had a one-third false negative rate. I mean, that they were faulty tests because they had done some mix wrong. I don't understand all the chemical elements here, but it's a elemental error. It's just silly. The FDA sent somebody to the CDC to find out what had gone wrong, because there was never any accountability for this. Scott Gottlieb, who we all know is a man of great credibility, wrote a book about this in which he says, well, it was just a typical bureaucratic foul-up. Well, very interesting. And maybe it was. The government screws up a lot. But it so happened that this particular foul-up did two critical things. One is it left us in an epistemological vortex of nothingness, nihilism, for the better part of 6 weeks during a mass panic. All right? So, like, we wanted desperate knowledge. Who has this bad disease? Do I have this bad disease? How many people have this bad disease? And the answer was, we don't know, and we cannot find out. Now, does that increase and intensify panic? Yeah, it does. And that's what characterized those first few weeks after lockdowns. Nobody knew anything, which is interesting because, well, it's funny, they were able to find out exactly who had what on the Diamond Princess boat. You know, and when Tom Hanks and his beloved wife turned up in Australia and tested positive for COVID, they had tests, but somehow we didn't have tests in the United States. And then a Gates Foundation lab scientist in Seattle snuck out some tests and sort of opened up the private testing things, celebrated by the New York Times as a great hero. Okay. So suddenly, 6 weeks later, we had tests. But the absence of tests did two things. One is it spread mass panic over who has it. How do I find out if I have it? Forget what are we going to do about it, by the way, right? I mean, like, nobody talked about that. So what? You test positive. What do you do then? Well, better wait for your vaccine. Oh, yeah, how's that going to help me? But crazy times. But the second thing it did was it made it impossible to find out how widespread exposure already was, which was very much to the advantage of the ruling class goal, which was basically to enact a coup. And before you start thinking I'm crazy, I can actually make a case I'm right about that. You have to test audiences now. By the way, if I had heard myself say this 5 years ago, I would have thought I was crazy. So, you know, just to be clear, I'm actually not crazy. I used to think I had this fantastic instinct for knowing what was insane and what was worth believing to be true. I no longer trust that anymore. So when people tell me Taylor Swift is a deep state asset who's plotting to get Biden in control, I'm like, maybe? We have a weekly writers group meeting, and it drives Lou Eastman crazy because you didn't come to this most recent one, right? And he said, Jeffrey, these things are getting ever more conspiratorial. He said, you know, I'm just waiting for somebody to claim that Pizzagate was true. I said, well, you know, Lou, you missed the meeting this week. That actually happened. So we don't know. We just have to stay open to all possibilities. Anyway, back to the testing point. I'm open to all possibilities. Was this part of the mapping out of the creation of mass panic? I don't know, and I've never seen an article investigating this, which troubles me very, very much. We lived through 4 years of this kind of swirling insanity all around us with a constant barrage of crazy data points falling on our heads. We no longer know what to think about, forget what's true. We're not even sure what happened to us, and it's making us all crazy, and there's a dearth of people who are looking into this. And Lou and I complain about this all the time. It's like, Brownstone should not have to exist. And we founded this thing in 2021 to investigate, research, and learn lessons from what happened to us, prevent it from happening again, but also to dig out of the current problem, which has not gone away. You know, everything that we experienced back in those days is still with us today. And yet we feel so alone. I mean, CHT, FLCCC, Brownstone, and a handful of other organizations working on various other issues concerning free speech or whatever, Meryl Nass with her, you know, pandemic planning group and some other things. But you think about the trillions of dollars that are spent on research, on writing, on think tanks, and forget academia, which proved itself to be utterly, completely useless throughout the greatest crisis of our life. Where the hell were they? They were hiding out or lying. Part of the problem. And the think tanks in Washington, forget them. They were useless to us, silent throughout, and still are. And so all of the old establishment that failed us in 2020, what are they doing now? They're pretending like it didn't happen. They're going on as if life is normal. Life is not normal. The crisis is ongoing. And I'm telling you, my friends, if we don't figure this out, like really figure it out, completely figure it out, and have some accountability for what happened, we cannot move forward with confidence that we are a morally courageous and free, civilized people. Of that, I'm absolutely certain. And I refuse to let it go. We cannot let it go. We've got to keep it going. So basically, you know, in 2022, when people like Barry Weiss said, I'm over COVID, and the mainstream media said, you can't be over COVID. You're supposed to be so afraid of COVID. She said, I'm just done worrying about it. Okay, I think both sides are wrong. I mean, yeah, be done worrying about the pathogen, but be really worried what was done to you in the name of government control of the microbial kingdom. Crazy, right? And a slight departure on this, all of our communities with whom we had been previously associated failed us, without exception. I mean, the churches closed and said, oh, sure, we can't have, obviously, we can't have Christmas. What? The world I knew very well is a, I'm sorry to introduce an arcane term to you, but there's this word called libertarians, okay? And they used to claim that they were in favor of freedom, that sort of thing. And I thought that was a good thing, so they were sort of my tribe. Well, where were they? They were completely silent, with the exception of a handful of people, like our board member, Don Boudreau, right? But not many. Most of them just completely failed. Or if you're the Cato Institute, you publish articles justifying lockdowns, tax-funded vaccine development, indemnification of vaccine companies, masking, and mandatory vaccination. That's what our glorious libertarian think tank in Washington, D.C. did for us in 2020 and 2021. So, mask failure all around. Well, how long? Well, let me just back up slightly. I have some friends in the UK that were initially against lockdowns and said this is very bad policy, what's happening here. But over time, the establishment wore them down. And I talked to them at the time, and they said, look, just believe what the authorities say. They're telling you what's true. Just stop making up your weird conspiracy theories about everything. Okay. Well, why do you say that? Well, the reason I say that is because there is no way, he said, under your narrative, for at least a year, or maybe many years prior, they'd been plotting to do this to us. Then it came along, and they deliberately botched the testing to panic the population, released a PCR test that was massively inaccurate, tested only for the presence of virus, but not actual sickness, doled out trillions of dollars in subsidies to have all the deaths misclassified so the population would panic even more, so that the hospitals would get rich. And the only reason they accepted the subsidies is because you previously bankrupted them because there was some bad guy in the center of power who closed all the hospitals for no particular reason, therefore making them financially desperate. And then in addition to that, the same people who did that had gradually taken control of all the media and embedded spooks in all the mainstream media, and they did the same thing with digital tech. And they bought them off by promising them that they'll make them rich by locking people in their homes, and they'll buy a bunch of goods from Amazon and send their kids to Zoom school to make those guys rich too. And that all of this happened by some centralized scheme. And the guy says, I don't believe the government's that intelligent. I don't think this happened. And my response to that was, yeah, you've got a good point. I have a hard time believing that also. But it's an empirical question, isn't it? Let's look into it and find out if this really did happen this way. What I'm telling you, my friends, and it's a terrible truth, I think what I just described did in fact happen. It did in fact happen to us. So yes, most of what the government does is stupid, and they can't get their act together, and it's a bunch of bureaucrats doing nothing. But there is one sliver of the government that is very, I would say, intelligent. That's why they call themselves that. It's the intelligence agencies. They're the ones. And they did indeed have a plot. I'm sorry to put it this way, they do. You know, we talk about who they is all the time. We've been using that word, they did this, and people say, who's they? It's the intelligence community. That's who it is. And yes, it's connected to the World Economic Forum. And yes, they have embedded employees at every single tech and media outlet. There's no reason for me to spend my time trying to argue that, but I will say this, something very interesting. Certain things we know for sure. And by the way, the reason those of us at Brownstone are so closely tied to the facts and the documents and the data and the disclosures out of courts and the emails, and you know, we want proof because we're skeptical thinkers. You know, like I'm not going to believe a conspiracy theory just because it, you know, it satisfies the sort of anger I have. I want to see the proof. So we have absolute concrete evidence of the following thing. In 2018, there was an organization founded in Washington, D.C., by legislation by Congress, called the Cyber Security Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA. And as a division of the Department of Homeland Security, the first head of CISA in 2018 was recruited directly from the National Security Agency, which itself is an outgrowth of the CIA. Okay, so that tells you a little bit about what CISA was. When the lockdowns happened, there was one organization, one agency that issued that great order, and you remember those days, dividing the whole American workforce between essential and unessential. They sent out a PDF, and you had to look at it and see which one you were. And this PDF was sent out to every state government, which in turn distributed to all the human resources people, who in turn distributed to all the HR departments in corporate America, which distributed it to the managers, which distributed it to the employees. And you had to look at this thing to find out if you could go to work or not. The most unbelievably un-American, anti-freedom thing you can possibly imagine to ever happen in labor economics. Was the Department of Labor ever asked? No. They were never part of this. It was just CISA, unelected. Nobody even knows the name of this agency. It was just founded in 2018, and suddenly they're in charge of the whole of the labor force, deciding who's essential and unessential. And it was a very strange division, too. You remember those days, because the people who were essential were the people declared to, yeah, basically kind of keep life going, you know, more or less. And the people who were unessential were, it's like a little reverse of what it seems to be. The essential workers were, basically they're the people that drop off your groceries at your front door. Okay, they were considered to be essential workers. The unessential workers continued to be paid lots of money to sit at home and do nothing. Okay, so it was the professional managerial class was given this vast break. And still get paid for it, so life was good, but it was like a feudal division. And I'm trying to imagine the way these bureaucrats are thinking in Washington. Like, well, let's say there's some big emergency, a virus, for example, lab leak. Clearly, I would need to stay home because I don't want to get sick. But I would need some groceries. Oh, yeah, how do we do that? Well, we could have somebody drop them off the door. Oh, excellent. But where are they going to get them? Oh, probably from the stores. Well, they're probably essential. Which stores? Well, I don't know, the big ones. How are they going to get their food? Well, see, how do they get them? They're driven there by trucks. Ah, OK, that's another essential worker. Let's make the truckers essential. And so on it goes. But what if my toilet breaks? Yeah, good point. Probably better make the plumbers essential too. You know, you can. This is the way they really think, and so they divided the whole American workforce up into this kind of feudal arrangement where the workers and peasants serve the professional managerial class, the upper class, the ruling class, and they did it. They did it without any votes or any. They just sent out a PDF and it was done, and it was so bad. Now it's true. I lived in one of the worst lockdown areas in the country. Western Massachusetts, but it was so bad that I had to give my own employees passes to declare themselves essential just in case we were stopped by the police on the road, because you weren't even sure. And what was even stranger was you weren't sure, is this a law? You know, is this like, Is it up to me to decide if I'm a sinner? Is there somebody out there deciding? What if I make the wrong decision? You know? What are the penalties? It was never clear. It was all foggy. It felt strange. Well, as time went on, we discovered gradually, and we know this now, that everything was instantly censored after March 13th. We didn't know this at the time, but I felt very alone. Like, I was posting, this is crazy, this has got to stop, this is all nonsense, this is insane. But I felt like I was, like, nobody agreed with me in some way. You know, there was a sense of, like, tremendous isolation. That's why these meetings are so important. We can find each other. I mean, the healing is that we need to go through is not just physical, right? It's emotional and spiritual. But I felt very alone, and I didn't understand why. Well, it turns out there were many other people with us. We just couldn't hear them. You hear all the time that, at least from our people, that people were not brave and did not resist, which is very depressing. The problem is that it seems as if there were a lot of people that did resist, that did object. We just didn't know it. And this is deliberate. And you know what the key organization that was involved with the censorship, right? Do you know the name of it? It's called the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. The same damn people who divided the workforce. The same, I don't even know how many people work there. 200, something like that? CISA also ran the censorship. They had employees in every single social media company. They rewrote all the algorithms to prevent the dissidents from speaking at every level. They curated the media. So suddenly, it was very strange. How many of you have seen the movie Big Short? You know that movie? Yeah, right. And so there's this guy, Michael Burry, right, who was the, he's played by, what's his name? Christian Bale. Yeah, and he's celebrated in the movie as a guy who never believed the propaganda, exposed the elites, you know, shorted the market, and then got paid, you know, billions of dollars or whatever. But I only found out two or three days ago that he was an original anti-lockdown guy. So he was posting on social media the day, March 13th, he was saying, this is absurd. If you look at the data, you can see that this is a, might have been a lab leak, but the outcome is a normal pathogen with, we have therapeutics to deal with it, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, other things. And the main vulnerable population is the Asian firm. The idea you would lock down the entire society is catastrophic. You're going to destroy the markets all over the world, demoralize people forever. We're going to see a mass increase in suicides and substance abuse and everything else. You're ruining society. He's saying this in the middle of March. Now, you would think, now here's a guy who's an acknowledged prophet, a guy who called 2008. We were told for years, be more like Michael Burry. Be a skeptic. Look at the data. Look beneath the propaganda. See what's going on. And he joined Twitter solely to fight this. Was he ever interviewed? No. He was never on CNN, never went on MSNBC. He was never on NPR to ask his views, even though he was an acknowledged expert, a guy who, a medical doctor, who could look at the data and had a track record. Instead, we had a constant barrage of crazy fake experts about whom we had never heard anything, who had no track record whatsoever. They were called epidemiologists. Why? Because they hung out in universities for longer than 10 years, and finally somebody got get rid of them by giving them a PhD. They plagiarized a bunch of shit and then got a good job. That's it. And they had weird names. We'd never even heard of these people. Who are you? And why are you talking to me? Sudra Yaman, or whatever her name is, right? She was on the air constantly. Well, we need to mask up and lock down and get to zero COVID, you know? Oh, well, thank you, professor, brilliant person. We never heard of these people. Nobody ever bothered. Do you have a track record? You know, what's your history of previously called? Well, if you looked into the history, Fauci got AIDS wrong. And who's that guy? I'm so bad with names. It goes with direction dislocation. Who's Not for example, who said that? You know exactly what I'm going to say before I say it, don't you? Yeah, Knight Frog. Niall Ferguson has a long history of getting everything wrong, and instead the entire world listened to the guy. Why did we do this? It's crazy. The guy was an acknowledged failure, not an expert, but a fraud. Instead, he was paraded all over the world. Mr. Trump got bad news from Niall Ferguson. Who's that? Well, he's a big epidemiologist in the UK, and he's got some models here, which he reduced to this graph, which is that you have to destroy the economy, or else all these people are going to be dead, and it's going to be your fault. Oh. Well, you say he has a British accent? Yeah. Well, he must be right. So that's where we were. That's where we were. I've been writing about pandemic lockdowns and controls since 2005, because if you go back to those times, there was a thing called the avian bird flu. Do you remember that thing? Mm-hmm. And it turned out, you know, at the end of the day, the avian bird flu only killed aged and infirm chickens. And never made its way over to the general population, but they had plotted lockdowns in those days too. So I had been writing about this. That's why I was so sensitive to this. So I knew the plans were in place. I never really imagined that it would actually ever happen. But they did it, and they lied. And we're still trying to figure it all out. And it's terrible. So just a few points on how much was affected and to what extent. You know, religious participation is massively down in this country because we shut the churches. And a lot of AA meetings were in churches in those days. And AA is a really important group for helping people maintain sobriety. And they shut all the AA meetings down and made them all go to Zoom. So a lot of people just turned back to their old ways and despaired. We now know about the suicides and so on, right? I mean, it's really bad. We have stories, very difficult stories, that pour into us daily at Brownstone. I feel such a profound sense of responsibility because our emails are constant. Dear Brownstone, in the winter of 2020, my son, who was a chess champion and a hockey player, lost all sense of purpose and meaning in life, and I found him dead in his room. He was having problems, but so was everybody. We tried to counsel him, but there were problems everywhere. I had other parents' groups, they were having problems with their son. I didn't imagine that my son would just outright kill himself, but he did. And I'm mad. I don't know why I'm writing you. I just feel like I want to tell you. And you respond. How do you respond? God bless you. I'm sad about your loss. You and millions of others will fight for you. We'll do what we can to find out the truth, get some accountability, but there will never really be justice. There is only sadness and harm. We cannot get back what we lost. We can only learn and internalize and fight. Fight for truth. Fight for morality and decency and humane values. Again, that's all we can do, I think. The main area that I did not understand, which I'm guessing most of you in this room understood, was that in the end, the people who were driving this plot against humanity, it's not just the deep state, but pharmaceutical companies. That I never would have believed. I never would have believed it. Because when I heard that there was a vaccine coming for this terrible pathogen, I dismissed it instantly. Why? Because I had read Virology for Dummies, okay? There's never been a vaccine for a coronavirus. It mutates too quickly. It can't work. I mean, at best, it's going to be a temporary therapeutic, but then even that introduces dangers of rewiring the immune system and making you more vulnerable to other pathogens. You don't want to muck with a virus like that. Also, doing this can cause mutations that wouldn't exist in nature at a much faster pace. So to attempt to vaccinate your way out of a respiratory pandemic is impossible, and it's likely going to make it worse. And I knew this as an economist. I knew this by reading Viruses and Immunology for Dummies, a book I downloaded on Amazon. And then I read, just to make sure, a first-year medical text in viruses, and read it. And I was certain of this. So I dismissed it. And I dismissed the whole thing as being, well, we did something stupid, we locked down, and now the world's trying to find an exit ramp, like an end game, some way to save face, and so we're going to distribute this crazy potion, but it's going to be innocuous and stupid and not do anything. So I just thought it was a big waste. Was it going to amount to anything? I never would have imagined first that was the whole point of the lockdowns, was to wait for the vaccine. That was the reason we suffered. Was because they wanted to prepare us for the shot. And I never would imagine that the shot itself would have had such a damaging effect, and that the purpose of the shot was to test out a new technology that otherwise couldn't get approved by the FDA. Right? That's some pretty dark stuff. And there was no way in my own mind that I ever could have imagined that such dark forces had seized control of the world. I never could have imagined such a thing. And I'm glad I didn't know then, because I don't know what I would have done. I mean, I feel like it's merciful that I only gradually came to discover this. And I'm very grateful to RFK's book for alerting me to a lot of the first book, The Real Anthony Fauci. And the most recent book, if you haven't got it yet, it's called The Wuhan Cover-Up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an absolutely brilliant book. His first book is just, a kind of a dump of all known research. The second one's much more clear. It's a gripping read from the first to the last. It'll alarm you, because you realize what happened in 2020 was the culmination of many, many decades. Okay, so we've got a problem. We've got major problems. I'm going to open it up for questions, but I'm going to mention, I couldn't think of a fifth area, or I couldn't limit it to three, so I'm going to say four, which is very imbalanced. When you give a talk, you never want to give 4 points. You always make it three or five, but I'm going to give 4 points. The big problems we face right now, we have working groups on two of them and working on the other two. The first one concerns pandemic planning, because the lessons that this $1 trillion industry has learned from this, you know what they are? They say, well, we made mistakes. We made mistakes. And they come down to three. We didn't have enough communication. Okay, so this is always bullshit, right? Always bullshit. If you're in a corporate meeting and somebody says, well, our problem is we don't have enough communication. Everybody goes, yeah, good point. Good point. Never enough communication, So that's something you can all agree with. Never enough communication. There's always a communication problem. We have a problem in communication. There must have been a communication problem. Oh, I agree. There's a communication problem. The second one is coordination. Oh, that's another excellent point. You can never have enough coordination. I mean, nobody wants discoordination. You always want coordination, so we should always have more coordination. That's another big failing that they grant. And the third one is not enough centralization. Yeah, it was just all over the place. I mean, Arkansas did this, South Dakota did that, Texas that. Who can keep this straight? We can't have that kind of system. Sweden did this, Angola did that, you know, South Korea did this. We got to have one plan for the world. This is what they think. All right, it's called the pandemic planning industry. This thing is out of control, and it's spending trillions of dollars, and it's got plots to do it again, but worse. Intensify every aspect of, if you hated what happened, they're going to do it again. This is a pandemic plan. We've got a study group dedicated to that at Brownstone. I got it funded. It's always not enough funding, but I've got it funded, and we're doing very important research. I could tell you about it, but I'm not going to. The second one is censorship. This is a major problem. They want to take over. They want to stop our ability to use the internet to communicate with each other and release information that has an effect on the public mind. They want us to be in a world that is fully controlled, and they can do it. They've done it in China. They're getting there in Europe, and they want to do it to the United States, too. So there's some pushback, but I can tell you, this or that lawsuit is not going to fix this problem. It's major. So we've got a working group on censorship, too. There are people who have access to all the Twitter files. We know where all the bodies are buried. We know everything. So we're releasing that gradually. The third one concerns the money, because all of this is connected to the central bank digital currency. If they can give us the central bank digital currency, which they will, they're going to try, and they're on the way. It's a foregone conclusion. They won't need to fire guns. They won't need to send out the cops to keep you in your home. They can just shut off your ability to live, unless you comply. This is the goal. We've got to stop this. So that's three big areas. The fourth area is the really the crucial thing, and it speaks to the issue of democracy and freedom and the ability, the idea that comes out of the Enlightenment that the people should have some measure of control over the rules under which we live, that there should be some relationship between the government and the people. That is a kind of give and take communicative system. More communication, more coordination. That would be nice. They don't want that. The administrative apparatus that's been gradually built up over many decades wants full, total control forever, autonomy, no oversight by the people, no oversight by the elected leaders. What happened in 2020 was essentially a coup against the elected governments of the world in favor of the administrative state apparatus. That's what actually happened. It's humiliating for the elected leaders. That's why they don't talk about it, but it happened. We've got to destroy the administrative state. I don't know how else to put it. It's got to be destroyed. I don't know how you do that, and we have no historical examples of an administrative state in an industrialized democracy being uprooted. We don't know what that looks like. We don't even know how to do it. We have the ambition, but we don't know the mechanisms. But we better figure it out right away.
Quickly. Yes. Yeah. Do you have time for questions?
Yeah,
we have very little time.
We have very
12
little
minutes
time.
Until the next program.
Okay.
And so...
Yeah, I'm going to stop there. I really wanted to leave it for questions, but I got carried away. So why don't we just open it up? Is that okay?
Pardon?
Open it up for questions?
Absolutely. Let's take... We can do it for 5 minutes, but we
Sorry.
Need the mic, folks.
Go.
Tanya has the mic right there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for your insights and appreciate your articles very much.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. So the way I would characterize what happened, we have a pandemic of toxins. And we have a pandemic of pathogenic toxins and psychogenic toxins. Which one do you think is worse in terms of the lethality of it?
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, so I can't really answer that. I'm so sorry. Yeah. Was it a trick question?
No.
Okay.
I guess my point is, you're talking about people thinking about...
Oh.
From a psychological point of view.
Oh, yeah.
And I tend to agree with that. I wrote an article about the new COVID sanity, the new PTSD, meaning postmodern.
Oh, sure. Our fundamental problems are philosophical. We definitely need some sort of cultural commitment to freedom and human rights that seems to have vanished. I didn't know it was as bad as it was, and I don't even know what that means to get this cultural consensus. I'm not even here preaching the answers, but all I can do is, I think we all just have to do our best in whatever way we can in our little neck of the woods to help people come to terms with what's happened. PTSD is exactly it. I read a journal article that said post-lockdown, the effects of post-lockdowns compared to PTSD. Yeah, makes sense, yeah.
We have time for two more, and then we
have been. I'm so sorry, I spoke too long.
That's all right, no, it's good stuff.
I'm curious if you're familiar with James Corbett's work.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he has, he and Dr. Nash put a lot of effort into tracking this down all over there in the anthrax letters and so forth.
Yeah, no, she is, Dr. Nash is fascinated about all that stuff. We work very closely with her, yeah.
Quick point, I don't think you're going to stop it as long as they've taken the value out of money, because all of this runs on money, and as long as they get to essentially print what they need to get their...
Speak into the mic. You have to speak into the mic.
Pardon me?
You have to speak into the mic. Don't hold it out here.
As long as they essentially get to print the funds that they need to enact all of these programs, it's just going to continue. Whereas if you actually put the value back in money and you actually have to earn it, all of this bureaucracy is going to disappear.
Oh, it's certainly true. I mean, the Federal Reserve is the whole reason that this lockdowns were perpetuated. I mean, they created, what, $5-8 trillion? I mean, without the money, the lockdowns would have ended right away. So, yeah.
Last question. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm thinking of your dark portrayal of the thing, and I agree 100%. And I'm right away jumping to what can we do. I'm a tax accountant. How about we have a massive tax revolt? What do you think of that?
Well, tax revolts are a problem because generally you get in trouble for not paying your taxes. If you have too many, but that's a problem. It's just like being at a stadium when everybody's standing up and you get tired of standing up. You're like, if you'd all just sit down, we'd all be more comfortable. We could see just as much. But it's impossible to control the crowds. And so this is the problem with great tax revolt schemes. But of course, it'd be wonderful. You know, they gave us stimuluses and took it all away in the form of inflation, right? I mean, that was completed about 8 months ago. It's all stimuluses were gone, inflated away. And now the Biden administration has hired 75,000 new tax collectors. So they're coming after every one of you, all of us.
It's okay, true. There's one more here, and then that's got to be it.
What are your thoughts on the teachers' union and how much power they showed during this pandemic?
Yeah, it was a remarkable thing. They just love staying home, right? And they wanted it to last as long as possible. The same is true for the New York Times reporters. I had a fascinating discussion with the New York Times reporter. He said, you know, initially we wanted lockdowns, celebrated lockdowns, because we figured it would destroy Trump. But then people really liked not having the commute. To work, so we try to keep it going on as long as possible. I said, that's your explanation in the New York Times? Yeah, that's it. It's a pretty pathetic world. Thank you so much for coming
out. Thank you. Thank you for being with us. Are you going to be around or do you have to race off?
No, I'll sit around.